You and your dog are a team. Fuel is best in the field and in life with Purina Pro Plan Sport. Made for hardworking dogs of all ages, every sport formula starts with real meat as the number one ingredient and is specifically formulated to support strength and stamina. Try it today and see why Pro Plan is the official dog food of Ducks Unlimited. Learn more at ProPlanSport.com.
Welcome to the Ducks Unlimited podcast, the only podcast about all things waterfowl. From hunting insights to science-based discussions about ducks, geese, and issues affecting waterfowl and wetlands conservation in North America, we bring the resource to you, the DU Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Ducks Unlimited podcast. My name is John Gordon. I'm a senior communications specialist here at Ducks Unlimited National Headquarters. And one of my jobs, and really my favorite job, is I'm the production coordinator for Ducks Unlimited Television. And if you'd have told me that I was going to be the production coordinator for DUTV back when I first started watching the show in 1997, I would have thought you were crazy, because it just, I've always been such a fan of the show, and it's been a big part of my life. And for me to be able to be the guy behind the curtain, so to speak, now is really like a dream come true. And the 2022 season that's coming up, first new episodes airing in July, is actually the 25th anniversary of DUTV. So we're doing this special podcast series commemorating the 25 years. And you have to put it in perspective that there's no other waterfowl-based show and very few outdoor-based shows that have been around that long. I mean, this show started back when there were no dedicated outdoor channels. We started out on the Nashville Network, and it's just been a big part of Ducks Unlimited ever since. So to commemorate that, we're going to do a special series of podcasts involving former hosts and people who have been involved with the show at all different levels. And so in this particular episode, we've got two of my favorite hosts on the show, and two guys that really kind of set the bar, I think, for what you really need to be as a host of DUTV, and Jared Brown and Mark Pierce. So, guys, welcome to the DU Podcast. It's great to have you.
Thank you, John. It's scary that we're talking about 25 years past now. Guess I have a lot more gray hair than when I started.
No, you got a lot more gray hair. It was black when we were doing the show, buddy.
Yeah, I've gone back and watched a lot of the early episodes, you know, really, you know, to prepare for the podcast, you know, to really see what y'all were doing back in 1999, 2000, and all that. Yeah, and he's right about that, Jared. You're a little more gray today than you were then, that's for sure.
Hey, like I say, at least I have it.
That's right. I've lost a lot of mine. I got this hat on, so you can't really see. It's my DU Podcast hat right there. But anyway, so what I really wanted to talk to y'all about is okay, for one thing, what a lot of folks don't know, and what I didn't really know, is that you two are really, you know, bonded, close friends, and have been friends for a long time. And you really came through Ducks Unlimited, am I correct?
Yeah.
That is correct.
Absolutely. I think it was about one beer in at a DU board meeting, and we realized we were brothers from different mothers, you know, that kind of thing. And have been, you know, close as brothers ever since. So, yeah, it was all Ducks Unlimited. And Matt Connolly, who was, they called the position the executive director at the time, I remember him calling and telling me, he said, hey, there's a new guy on the board. You are going to love this guy. Like, you guys are going to hit it off. And I think he told Jared the same thing, and he was 100% accurate. Yeah, it's been a special friendship.
Yeah, that's without a question, John. That's one of the blessings, many blessings, that by becoming involved with DU and, you know, the wonderful works, it's also the opportunities that I've had to meet some wonderful folks throughout the country that have this same passion, but no more or greater than the man sitting on the other side of this screen, and that's Mark Pierce. As Mark mentioned, a half a beer in, we were blood brothers, and we're like, oh, my God. We just didn't know it. We're from the same genes. We're just a little different parents.
I understand. That's a popular saying that I've always heard, that people come to DU for the mission and they stay for the people. And with the two of you, that could be, you know, that saying is no more true than just looking at the long history you've had together. And so let's go back in time a little bit. I was checking out, watching the old shows, Mark. You must have filmed your first season in 1999, which aired in 2000. How did you come about being a host of the show at that point? And so give the listeners a little insight into the process.
Yeah, I can't believe it was that long ago. First of all, you know how that goes. But so I was on the board. I was on DU's board at that time, and it was a really big and important part of my life, having served as a local volunteer and worked through the volunteer system, and then having the great honor to be elected on the board as regional vice president, then senior, and then what they call an advisory senior vice president. And the leadership at DU at that time, as it has been since then, was just stellar. And it was just a fantastic experience. And part of that, to your question, is that we were in a committee meeting, I believe it was the marketing committee at one point, and Matt Connolly, who I referenced earlier, and others said, you know, hey, we've done this TV show for a year. You know, we DU, as you mentioned, was ahead of the pack in creating a lifestyle-themed television show that projected the values of Duck Hunters and, of course, Ducks Unlimited. And after the first season, which had been hosted by an actor, and he was a great guy and he was very talented, but what we were talking about is they'd gotten a lot of feedback that the audience was saying, hey, we like this guy, but it's pretty obvious he's not really a duck hunter. You know, he doesn't blow his duck call, he doesn't have a dog, he doesn't, you know, he misses a lot and all the rest. And they were like, you know, we think we need a new host. You know, maybe we should just get some regular Joe who's just really passionate about DU. And someone looked across the table and said, Mark, why don't you do it? You know, you talk a lot. And I was a guest on the season, the first season, and it turned out okay, I guess. So I said, wow, you know, that might be kind of fun, but I don't know if I can be gone 13 weeks, you know, out of the fall, if my wife's going to quite permit that, which is what at the time was 13 episodes, and each was, you know, more or less a week. So there was another fella who wasn't on the board. I think he was on the Watt board at the time, named Orrin Richard, another great guy from Louisiana. So Orrin and I split those duties. We did some together, and then we separated for some for a few years, and then Orrin's business was very demanding, and he determined that he could no longer participate, and that's when Jared jumped in, and then Jared and I did for a number of years together. But yeah, it was all, like you said, it was on the Nashville network. There was maybe only, I don't know, 4 or 5 hunting shows, period, at that time, if you can imagine, because there's, you know, like hundreds of them now. And, you know, it was off to the races, and just became a real big part of my life for a number of years.
Yeah, mine too. And like you said, there really was no program. I remember there were some early videos and some DVDs out, but there was no television show that was dedicated to duck hunting. And that's what I did. You know, that's what I lived for. You know, I mean, I started hunting when I was 10 years old. And at that point, you know, it really was something that it really intrigued me that there was a show about waterfowl hunting. And actually, you know, the first episodes, if you go back to the first couple of seasons, not every show was about waterfowling. And they've told me that was not blowback, but the Nashville network didn't want a show that was totally just about duck hunting. They wanted more variety in the show, so they did turkeys and elk and different things like that. So it didn't really become a dedicated duck hunting show until you started hosting with Orrin, and then Jared came on, and Wade Bourne, and some of the other guys. And so that's when it really became a waterfowl-only show at that point. But
that's right. Yeah, it was originally called The World of Ducks Unlimited.
That's right.
And the idea was that the world of Ducks Unlimited surpassed just duck hunting, you know, that duck hunters are also turkey hunters or deer hunters and all the rest. And they mixed some of that in. And then in later years, it was determined, hey, man, Ducks Unlimited is still at its core. mostly supported by duck hunters. There's other hunting shows out there where people can watch deer and turkeys. You know, let's duck hunt. And I think it's been that way since then, you know.
It has been.
Yeah,
it
we
has
did. Been. We did do a few cast and blast type of shows in Alaska with the Copper River Delta, where we fish for salmon in the morning, the silvers, I believe it was, and then duck hunt in the afternoon, waiting for the tides. And a couple other shows had the cast, you know, that combination.
Yeah.
And again, trying to reach out to an audience that even a lot of hunters, as Mark said, are fishermen and vice versa.
And that's still something that's really important to DU today, you know, is the diversity, clean water, what we do for wetlands, for flood mitigation, things like that. So it's really, you know, weighs on the mind of everybody around here that yeah, sure, I mean, we really are wetlands conservationists, but you know, that wetlands conservation flows over into everybody's life, you know, in all communities from all over North America. So it's, you know, those early shows really kind of showed that. But, you know, we've done a little, you know, extra stuff. We had, you know, some pheasant hunting last year on one of the shows. And I've got some ideas about, you know, maybe branching out into more of that in the future. And watching a lot of those old shows have given me some ideas along those lines that maybe we should go back and revisit, you know, showing more of where we touch people's lives besides just waterfowling.
Well, one of the things, you know, we've always said through the years, and I'm now come back on the board, is it's wetlands and associated habitat.
Right.
And those associated habitats are upland games and even big game, those type of things. It all works together. And when we're talking about conservation, it's habitat. We're trying to preserve, protect, and restore these landscapes. And it's not just wetlands.
Yeah. Amen.
Exactly. Do you guys remember on the World Ducks Unlimited what the tagline was when they opened the show?
More habitat on the ground means more waterfowl in the sky, something like that.
Well, that was actually Wade saying. You know, he came up with that, and that was what he used a lot on the show. In the beginning, though, it was a spirited outdoor adventure and a commitment to conservation is what they said. You know, welcome to the World of Ducks Unlimited, right? So it and then, you know, actually the name changed to DUTV in 2002. That's when it became Ducks Unlimited Television. And the first episode of a guy from Louisiana who was hosted you and Oren on a teal hunt at Cajun Outback was the first appearance of Jared Brown on DUTV. And
that's right.
Then you became a full-time host in 2003, Jared. So tell us about that. I mean, how were you approached about joining the show?
Well, one of the things I have to comment on that teal hunt and at the Cajun Outback, that was right after 9/11. And we were actually delayed a few days because the president and the whole world just shut down the airlines. And I will tell you, that flight that I finally did board to go to Houston, Texas, it was very nerve-wracking, and I had a big gentleman on the plane that got on the plane, and he basically just sat rocking the whole time going, nobody's going to the front, to the bathroom. You're going in the back. I'm like, I'm right behind you, big guy. I tell you what, I'm all for it. But, you know, the opportunity to host Mark and Oren at Cajun Outback was a wonderful time, but that was one of the most, you know, nerve-wracking experiences was get on that plane right after that 9/11, a couple of days later.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Without a question, again, Mark, I know, had a lot of influence on me co-hosting alongside of him. Without a question, I love duck hunting. I love all waterfowling, and I'm very passionate about wetlands and conservation, and I love to hunt. Every day, every hunt, I feel like a young kid. It's like my first hunt. And I think I was able to certainly project that on the screen when I was hosting, co-hosting with Mark, as well as, you know, sometimes individually hosting, and tried to share that passion and that love for the outdoors, the traditions of waterfowling, along with the great works that we're doing with, you know, Ducks Unlimited and all these, well, throughout North America. So it was very enjoyable. It was one of the most fun times, one of the most rewarding experiences I've ever had.
Well, that's great. And no one could ever say you were cheated on your enthusiasm, Jared. I'd say from watching the old episodes, you do love it, man. It comes through, and it's very evident, you know, that you really
are into changed. It. He hadn't changed at all. He wakes up. If we're duck hunting, every morning is Christmas morning for Jared. He's ready to go, man.
Yeah, Mark always puts the new guest at Cajun Outback with me, because you're going to have to show him how to hunt at Cajun Outback.
Yeah. Hey, I don't blame you for that, Mark. I'd put him there with Jared, too, man. If anything, they're going to be entertained, whether they kill anything or not, for sure.
That's a fact.
But anyway, we were talking about Wade Bourne earlier, and I know y'all worked really closely with Wade, too, because he really kind of took over what we call the raps part of it, you know, the intros and exits of the show, Mark. Over from you, you did that for a while yourself. Wade came on, and Wade was such an outdoor statesman. He was incredible. And so what was it like to work with Wade and really get an up close and personal a look at him and what he brought to the show?
Yeah, he was, like you said, he was like the consummate pro and gentleman. And he was different than Jared and I, because Jared and I were we were kind of hacks, right? We didn't know. We weren't writers. We weren't we had no experience doing anything like this. We were just, you know, love DU, love duck hunting. So let's go for it. You know, Wade had a real extensive background in outdoor journalism. You know, he was an excellent writer, photographer, the whole thing. So he was a really good yin, kind of Jared and I's yang, you know, and we just loved him. And Jared and I joked when the show got busy and we all had our personal lives to run and we needed to offload a little bit more, Wade came in to help, did the raps. He also, to his credit, he was kind of the head of the curve on this. He was a big proponent and advocate of public land hunting. You know, he just was always for stories and opportunities for the common guy that was hunting on public land. And so when we planned these hunts out, this is a little bit of how the sausage is made, and you certainly know now, John, is that if it's just going to be amazing duck hunting, you know, lots of ducks on camera, it's probably on somebody's private land somewhere, you know, because the ducks they're less wary, there's more of them, et cetera. Now, we always mixed in a lot of public land hunts, of course, because that's a big part of our tradition in America. But, you know, you just lower your expectation. The birds are going to be tougher. You're not going to shoot as much. You might have some guy hunting over here next to you, you know, whatever. And Wade was so passionate and committed to that public land hunter. He said, look, guys, I'll take all the public land hunts. You guys can take the fancy duck club shoots. And we were like, okay. Because we'd done a lot of those in years, you know, prior to Wade joining. And sometimes it was a grind. You know, you'd go out public land somewhere and Kansas and, you know, shoot 3 gadwalls in 3 days. But it was still important to show that part of hunting. But yeah, Wade, can't say enough good about him. Gentleman, big heart, passion for DU and for our great traditions that were just off the chart.
Yeah, I'd like to echo those same sentiments. You know, Wade, every time I was around him, you just felt good. And he's very eloquent, like Mark said, with his background, being a professional writer. And we had a long-standing joke and would kid one another. Mark and I were the junkies when we bring our little snacks in the blind. I mean, Pop-Tarts. I still eat Pop-Tarts today. But Wade was like, you got to be kidding. He had Spam. And I was like, oh, no, we're not eating Spam.
Spam and potted meat and Vienna sausages.
To bring that point that Mark was talking about with the public land, case in point is like one of the shows I did was the Horicon Marsh, the fable area up there in Wisconsin. And I can remember getting with volunteers, big old Jack Nugent, and it was 3 in the morning, raining, sleeting. He's with his shirt off. I'm freezing my butt off coming from the south. And we're preparing to go out to the blind to make sure we get a spot before the other hunters get there. And on top of that, you have to hire 2 cameramen, a sound guy, plus me with, you know, some of the guests. it was just a nightmare to try to hunt public land with birds that have been sky busted and overshot, you know, things of that sort. But we did get shows off. We were in an area that could showcase a lot of the DU projects that were up there and the work that we're doing. So at the end of the day, they weren't a total bust. You just didn't have as many, you know, rewarding kill shots on that show.
Yeah, and I've tried to integrate, you know, public land still as much as possible. You know, we kick off the show this year with some public land to early season teal hunting in Nebraska. That'll be episode one with some university students up there. So we try to still try to do it, but you're right, the challenges are there. And ducks, let's just face it, there's not anything harder to film as far as a hunting setting, though, than waterfowl.
Yeah.
People don't really realize. They just see their end product. They don't realize what in the world went on to try to catch those birds in that perfect spot. I mean, where, you know, you could have ducks all over you, geese too, and they're not in the right position for the cameras. I mean, you know, you can go on and on about how difficult it really is to film. It's tough.
Yeah, John, you know, I've told Jared the story before of, I think it was in the very first season of that I was involved in, and Oren was part of it. There was a grand opening at a Bass Pro Shops in Nashville, I believe it was. And we were to appear there because, you know, we were quote-unquote TV hosts. And I saw Kurt Gowdy there, and, you know, American sportsman. I mean, yeah. That's really what spawned all of these shows now. He was the godfather of outdoor TV. He was in a wheelchair, and I just couldn't wait to meet this guy. And I watched him all growing up. And I told him I was helping out with the DU show, and he said, man, he goes, God bless you. He goes, duck hunting shows are the hardest thing there is to film because, you know, what's the number one rule of duck hunting? Don't move. What do you have to do with cameras if you're going to get anything? You got to move, you know, and you got extra people. And back then, too, it's worth noting when Jared and I were doing this, that the cameras were huge. I mean, they were, I don't know, you know, like two cinder blocks side by side. Now there's a lot small. The technology, of course, has changed a ton, and you can get the same quality out of a probably darn near out of your iPhone, but certainly smaller cameras. But back then, you had these giant cameras. The guys wanted to be on sticks, if they could, as they call it, or tripods. And so hiding our whole getup there was a challenge. And then you throw that on public land, you know, it's going to be tough sledding. Yeah.
Yeah, there were a few places, talking about, Mark said, two cinder blocks. It was probably almost three, and it weighed that much. And now we tromped through those, the wilderness, if you would, in Alaska to go to a back pond with decoys, everything. In fact, we had to take the cameraman's cameras for a minute. They were like dying trying to walk through that bog and everything. It was like, oh my gosh, today it had been so much easier. But this big.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. You can get some really high-quality stuff just off a DSLR setup. Yep. And that's what, you know, most of the guys, especially in the blind and everything, that's what they have. But you can catch some pretty good bird footage off of them as well. So it's really changed the dynamic of having to hide people as well. You know, like you said, with that really, really big equipment, it's really easier now. But it's still a challenge. It's just, you know, duck hunting on camera is always going to be tough. And if you want to guarantee that birds don't want to come in, put a camera out there. And it's they just go the other way. So it's pretty crazy.
I tell you, one of the other things about the camera, and it was very frustrating for me, and I finally had to learn this, but truly for the first 5 to 10 minutes of the hunt, the camera was not able to pick up the birds. There just wasn't enough lighting. And in many places, that's about 2/3 your limit. You know, there were times we'd be birds in the decoys like, can you see? Can you see? Can you see us now? No, just wait.
It's too dark. Like, oh, can't see. Yeah. And the number one rule is don't shoot a bird unless the camera's got it, because then it's in a waste for the show, right?
Yeah.
And so you had to train yourself, and you'd be, we'd be like little, you know, like our dogs would be, you know, come on, let us go. Nope, not enough light yet. You got to wait. Like, oh, you're killing us here.
It's still that way to an extent. All those cameras today, they pick up light faster, so you don't have to wait as long. But you're right, like early teal and things like that, you could be over with in 10 minutes. You know, by the time the cameras are ready, you could have nothing. So
that's right.
Once again, that's just another aspect of how difficult it is to get this stuff on film. And, you know, it's a challenge. It's a challenge. I want to talk for a second about a couple of shows that are my favorites. And get your opinion on some of y'all's favorite memories from the show. There was a particular episode down, let's see, it was in 2005, episode 9. And y'all were in Mexico. It was the three of you. It was Mark, Oren, and Jared all together in Mexico. And I thought this was so hilarious because there were so many spoonbills coming in.
And, I know it's coming.
And Oren pulled up and shot one. And that's when the floodgates opened for Oren and Jared. It was on at that point. And Mark, you were just over there going, shaking your head, and you weren't doing it. So tell us about that episode.
I'll let Jared tell that story, see if it's true.
I can remember it like it was yesterday, John. And it was, first of all, as you said, Oren started shooting spoonies. I mean, I looked and I was like, you're Cajun. What are you doing shooting spoonies, you know? And he goes, I'm tired of them coming in the decoys, and there's nothing else. It's time for them to go down. I was like, he goes, come on, JB. I'll have a cigar for you back at the lodge. You start shooting. I said, I'm in, baby. Next flock comes in. Hell, I took my spoonies, too. And we could not entice Mark with all kind of leverage. Cold beers, cigars, nope. And I'll never forget that line at the end of that show. Mark ends the show with, I've been spoonie free since 73. Not anymore. I saw him shoot some this year.
I was afraid you were going to say that. It's true.
I have him on video. If we need any video.
Yep.
His dog picking up a spoonie.
It was slow this year. One day, Jared and I were out, and I've got this new dog, and I was just dying for him to make some more retrieves. So I said, it's time to break my spoonie abstinence. So I'm back in the club. But, I was holding strong in Mexico.
It made for a very entertaining episode. Let's put it that way. It wouldn't have been near as good if it had been all pintails or something, right, coming in. It was great that they were giving you all kind of grief for the spoons, Mark. It was a fun show. Another one I like that's really kind of near and dear to me was I've been a snow goose hunter since I was a little kid. Grew up around the Houston, Texas area, you know, back in the heydays when that was where they were. And, you know, y'all know that area well, too. There was a particular episode, and I want.
You and your dog are a team. Fuel is best in the field and in life with Purina Pro Plan Sport. Made for hardworking dogs of all ages, every sport formula starts with real meat as the number one ingredient and is specifically formulated to support strength and stamina. Try it today and see why Pro Plan is the official dog food of Ducks Unlimited. Learn more at ProPlanSport.com.
I want to say it was during the early conservation season days, somewhere in there. And I want to say it may have been in that same area where y'all filmed that teal hunt down there. There was a pit blind in the ground, and a guy had put out some like 10 or 15 stuffers. I'd never seen anything like it before. And, you know, we were used to putting out 1,000 decoys at a time and all this. And it was just like, I think y'all were pretty skeptical as well about, are these geese going to come into here? And y'all had some huge flocks decoy into that little spread. So tell us about that a little bit and how that all came together.
Jared, you better take that one too. That is, I'll just spoiler alert, but that is actually Jared's property down in Texas, which he and I spend a lot of time at now down on the Gulf Coast. And so he's got 30 years of history with that place and that old guide. So, tell him about that, Jared, because that was amazing what he used to do with those stuffers. And he called with his mouth.
Yeah. The John, our former basically manager of the place, grew up there in that area called Cove, Texas. And he was incredible with a diaphragm call. He literally just could talk to snow geese, just like he was a wild goose himself, and bring a flock from 500 yards up. I mean, these birds were high, and they liked this portion of Cajun Outback. It was a kind of a sandbar area, which you will in our marsh. And the birds would feed in the fields, the soybean fields, the rice fields back in those days, and then fly over and come back to our marsh to just lounge around during the day and roost as well. But we had for a number of years some outstanding goose shoots. And as you said, that particular show, I think, you know, we were hoping that it would be a steady flow of flocks coming in. We maybe had a couple of small flocks come in, but then the mother load came in and it had to be close to 1,000 birds or more on us at one time. And I mean, they just started with that. And our blinds were pit blinds, but we had screens above us. And so we put a little grass and stuff. I mean, literally, we're looking up and they're flying 5 feet above us, just going to be landing out in front. And the noise, if you can imagine 1,000 snow geese, it was deafening. And when Mark and I called the shot, it was out there right in front. They were just coming in. It was like, take them.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it erupted.
It was amazing. Well, and you'd love, John, like, you know, it's you're obviously an accomplished snow goose hunter because you noticed that this methodology that this guy had, his name was Steve, but his theory was that if you put out a ton of decoys, you got to sound like a ton of decoys, right? And there's more chance that the geese, snow geese, are so dang smart that they're going to notice that there's no movement in those decoys. But if you put out, and this was kind of pre or maybe early electronic call, but his thing was you put out stuffers, so you get a little bit of, you know, the wind blows down there a lot, so the feathers are kind of puffing, you're getting at least a little bit of movement. And then he called with that diaphragm call, and he said, now you only have to sound like five geese. He had a thing, he would only hunt odd numbers. He'd either hunt with 3, 5, or 9, or 11, you know? And usually it was, you know, in that 5 to 10 range. And then you'd get a whole flock coming and he's just like with his diaphragm, rah, 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 just sounding like a few birds. But he was so good with it that I think that group would, they almost had less fear of that small realistic decoy spread. And that's not the first time that Jared and I saw him put 1,000 geese over 5 decoys or 10 decoys, you know? It's amazing.
No, it was spectacular. And to this day, he probably was the most effective snow goose caller I've ever seen.
Me too, yeah.
I mean, he really had their language. He'd listen, and the conversing with the snow geese was spectacular. And there were times during the hunt, we have several blinds in the area. Once we saw that flock start working and just stop dead in their tracks, start spinning, it was like, okay, shut all the blinds down. We're going to let Steve do his thing. And those 3 or 4 hunters with Steve are going to have a lot of fun.
Magic. Yeah, it was incredible.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, really, coming from a snow goose hunting standpoint, because a tactic that I've used a lot for ducks as well is show them something they're not seeing all the time. They're seeing that 1,000, you know, windsock spread all over the prairie back in those days. They weren't seeing, you know, 10, 11, 12 birds in a small flock, you know, alone in the marsh. They just never saw that. So they couldn't believe, right? They couldn't believe that was not real. Right. So I could see why that would work. But anyway, it's one of my favorite episodes y'all ever did together. It's cool.
Oh, and it was extra fun because it was, you know, right there on the place that we hunt to this day. I think there's another interesting kind of note in all of that that I was just telling someone the other day. You know, when I started with the show, being from Montana, and we primarily shoot mallards here, and honestly, the mallards are fresh off the prairie, so it's kind of like hunting in Canada. They haven't been shot a lot. They haven't seen a lot of the tricks. And it wasn't until I started hosting the show and traveling all over with Orrin and then Jared that I realized that people in the South, oh boy, this will make somebody mad maybe, but they're actually better hunters because they have to be, right? It's like the snow goose thing that, you know, you're thinking of new tricks and whatever because these ducks have been all the way down the flyway, or geese in this case. And I just found there was a lot of people in the South that were incredibly good callers, good decoy strategists, you know, good all the rest, Whereas those of us this close to Canada, you know, we throw a handful of mallard decoys out and call halfway decent, we're fine, you know? So that was an interesting lesson for me as I traveled around.
Yeah, you know, that reminds me of a show we did, Mark and I, after a board meeting. We were in Saskatoon and went out to Quill Lakes, of which Quill Lakes, even today and back then, it is a big staging area for snow geese coming off of the Arctic, coming off the Boreal Forest in that area. And we were told we're going to be shooting snow geese in white plastic lawn chairs. And I'm thinking, what do you mean a white plastic lawn? And okay, the legs were sawed off, so it was only about this high, but we're in the middle of the field. We have cameras to hide. It's Mark and I alongside the DU of president at that time was John Tomke and Peter Carton, DU Canada.
President of DU Canada, yep.
And we get out there the first afternoon. It's windy, starts setting up. Mark looks up, and I mean, literally, I thought he was going to catch this snow goose coming in the decoys. They wanted in so bad. They were so hungry. And, you know, once again, we're sitting in white chairs above the ground, just wide open, but, you know, with thousands of snow goose in rags. And what a spectacular
birds are coming right
sight.
In.
The kamikaze little Ross geese, I mean, just kamikazing in. The snows weren't quite as crazy, but those little Ross geese was mind-boggling.
Yeah. Yeah, you remember too, Jared, a funny part of that was at that time, Jared and I were probably, you know, like 40-ish, and the two DU presidents were probably 20 years older than us. And the limit was big. I forget what it was. It was, you know, the conservation type limits. And we shot a bunch of birds. I mean, we had a pretty good pile. And then John and Peter, both great guys and gentlemen, they said, you know, our shoulders are getting a little sore. You know, we might have enough. And Jared and I quickly counted. We only had half our limit, and we're like, no. If you guys you guys lay down and hold still, we're gonna keep hunting. And we
Bruce
did.
Bruce Batt says we have a problem with the populations. We need
we're
to take
gonna
more
help
out
of
that air.
And by
so
gosh,
we're gonna do
we got
my
our
job.
Limit. Yeah, that was fun, man.
It's a conservation show. You know, you had to do your job,
right? That's
right. You had to do your part. It did. You really to help the snows. But another really unique episode, Mark, and this was to you because Jared wasn't there. There was a episode you did in Montana with a falcon. And how did that come about? And I've never seen it before since that somebody was, they were trying, you were hunting birds. I believe pheasants as well. You know, trying to catch them with a falcon. So how did that come about?
I think there was I have a farm here in Montana. We film, you know, different shows here off and on during those times and still hunt a lot. Jared comes up several times a year. So there's a lot of mallards here, primarily mallards in the later season. And I've had some falconers come and ask me before if they could hunt. And the first time that happened, I said, man, yeah, you can go, but you got to take me with you. Like, I got to see this. I've always been fascinated by raptors and birds of prey. So we go out, and this guy, he comes back a few days later. He gets his female peregrine falcon, and he puts it up, takes the hood off, puts it up in the air. And I pointed, and I said, that big bend on the creek right there, said there'll be a bunch of ducks, you know, right there. And but we, of course, stayed back so we wouldn't flush him. So the falcon went up in the air, and then it started flying these little tight circles over that corner, and he's watching it. He says, okay, you know, she's got him. He said, now we need to run up to the creek, and we need to yell and holler and clap our hands to get the ducks to fly. And I kind of looked at him like, dude, you don't know anything about ducks. Like, when they see us, they're going to go, you know? So I kind of mentioned that to him, and he goes, oh, no, not now, because they see her. I'm like, what? So we run up to the creek, and true to his prediction, if you can imagine, this is a duck hunter, all the mallards swam over to the shore and hid in the grass instead of going up in the air, except for one. And the hen mallard, rah, 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 and that falcon dropped. And when the falcon hit that duck, it sounded like somebody hitting two by fours together or something, you know? I'll never forget that. The duck tumbled out of the sky. And so next day, I was on the phone to Memphis and said, guys, we got to film a falcon killing a duck. And So we set it all up, and then the camera operator showed up, and they're like, you know, what are we doing? A lot of the camera guys back then weren't really hunters, so we had to kind of, Jared and I would explain to them. And I said, well, this Falcon, you know, and they're like, wait a minute, doesn't Falcon go like 200 miles an hour? And I said, yeah, something like that. And they're like, and we're supposed to film that?
Yeah.
So, but they did. We had to do a bunch of them, but they got enough bits and pieces to make it work. And man, if you ever get a chance to witness that, it's that is a incredible bird that, you know, a duck is bigger than a falcon, and yet they just absolutely smack them out of the air. So cool.
Mark and I get to witness that even at Cajun Outback. We have a couple of falcons that hang out, and when the airboats start running down, boy, next thing you know, this thing's just dive bombing right over our
heads.
They
love the teal. Yeah, smacking those teal down there.
I can imagine. It's a small bird for them, so they it's a little easier target. But I've hunted at Real Foot Lake several times, and there's bald eagles hanging out all over the place up there. And people will tell me, you cripple a duck or something like that, and they'll come snatch them, you know, right off the water. And birds of prey are incredible. So that's an idea. You know, like I said, watching a lot of these old shows have given me a lot of ideas about things we might ought to revisit, and that might be something that would be really cool.
Yeah,
if we can make it happen.
Film it out here, John. We can set you up.
Yeah, I'm going to look into that, Mark. I think people would love it to see that again. I'm trying to... We've kind of got a little gap on our shows on online. And so also, too, if anybody out there in the audience, you can see most of these shows we've been talking about all at ducks.org. We've got them all there on our classic episodes on the website. But there's kind of a gap of shows we don't have. So when did y'all stop hosting DUTV? What point was that?
You remember, Jared?
Well, you know, I think I retired off the show saying, hey, getting a little gray, give someone else a wonderful opportunity. I believe that was like in 2009, maybe 10,
yeah,
the latest.
That's what I'm thinking is I think I did something in 08 a little bit, but like 2007 may have been the last year that I was really involved. And one of the last shows we did, Jared, that sea duck hunt in Connecticut in Rhode Island?
I think it was one of the last shows that you and I did that was very special. And I'll let Mark talk about that. You know, what we encountered out there, you know we're going to a certain destination. We know we're going to be doing certain type of hunting, but it doesn't always unfold, you know, as expected, like we've been talking about. And I think what was so unique about this show, and I'll let Mark touch on that, was what we did encounter. Because it resonates constantly in our mind. We revisit that experience and laugh about it constantly.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of starts with the note that when people ask Jared or I, like you guys did these hunts, I think I did like 70-some hunts, maybe 80-something over all those years. And like, you know, with that all that experience, what was the best hunt you did or what's your favorite? Of course, it's impossible to pick because, you know, every hunt has its uniqueness. If it's in, you know, Central California shooting pintails or down in a great property in Louisiana, you know, in the swamp. Every part of the country has its uniqueness, and there's so much learning in that. And for us, like we talked about at the beginning, it was so great just because everywhere we went, we were met by and hung around really wonderful people that were super passionate DU volunteers, and those friendships and all the rest were as memorable as the hunts. But anyway, in this particular one, I guess where I was going there is that I always tell people, if you're a big duck hunter, do a sea duck hunt sometime. Got to do that because it's just so interesting. It's so different. And the fact that these species live out there in those conditions and how they're hunted. So in this case, we were to hunt with some volunteers down in Rhode Island that were eider hunters, common eiders, late in the season. And we went with them, and man, it was fun. It was fantastic. They were the Taparoe brothers and Jim Taparoe, who's still a wonderful DU volunteer. And we shot eiders. I think that was, Jared, your first eiders. And I got a banded one, I remember. I still got the pictures, man. It was a blast. Big rocks, and we were in boats, but you know, waves splashing in. Then we go meet some other volunteers up in Connecticut, and they had some sea duck hunting and also some Atlantic brant hunting lined up because neither of us had ever shot an Atlantic brant. So the brant was first up, and we go out, and we're in like some fancy pants coastal community in Connecticut where there's multi-million dollar houses. And we're in the dark, and all of a sudden Jared and I realize we're right next to these houses, you know? And we said, is this okay? And they're like, well, they don't like it, the people that live here, but it's legal. You know, it's just the way it is. Like, okay, you know, when in Rome. So we set up, and all of a sudden the biggest, baddest house that we're next to, the guy turns his stereo as loud as it'll go. Bruce Springsteen is playing on the porch, and he's trying to drive us out of there, basically. And these guys are like, ah, don't worry about it. It's the kind of stuff we encounter all the time. Jared and I are looking at each other, like, man. And they had told us over and over, like, whatever you do, you can only shoot one Atlantic brant, so be careful, because if you shoot into the flock, you're going to kill more than one. We're going to have a problem. So we got that plan in our heads. Then this thing happens, so a wonderful volunteer, Scott Spry, he finally goes to talk to this guy and face him. We're like, I don't know if it's a good idea. You might get shot. And turns out the guy had some history with DU. Scott calmed him down. He turned the stereo down and joined Ducks Unlimited by the end of the hunt. We never shot any brant. They never showed up, but that was quite an experience. And then later that day and the next day, we shot old squaws in a skull boat. We shot, I think we shot some scoters or something. I mean, it was just hanging out with these guys, a guy named Hank Garvey, who's from that area, Massachusetts, and he was down helping us with this hunt. I think we both shot our first old squaws. Tell them about the old squaw hunting, Jared. That was so cool.
I know. That's back in that time, they were old squaws. Today it's the long-tailed duck.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, the long-tailed duck. We got to be correct here. But the interesting thing about this long-tailed duck was it was extremely fast. I mean, it literally flew right above the deck of the waves. And but the most interesting thing was, as Mark touched on, we did a sculling boat. And I had never experienced laying in one of those. And so this Hank Garvey had this sculling boat. And what the deal was, you'd see this flock rafted out here in the bay. And then as soon as they dove, they basically just simultaneously all pretty much dove at the same time, you'd scull as quick as you could. And you could cover a lot of ground. I mean, he literally could go about 50 yards in a matter of about 3 seconds, 4 seconds. And when we got over the spot, he'd bang on the side of the boat, and these long-tailed ducks would literally come up out of the water like missiles. And, I mean, you're shooting this bird brazen up. It was the most incredible scenery of—
It was.
Wow. When was the last time you really shot a bird just rocketing up? Versus, you know, coming into the decoys.
It was like shooting a rooster pheasant, you know, coming out of the grass, except as this long-tailed duck, just little missile coming out from underneath the water. They didn't pause on the surface. They just popped out and were flying. It was incredible.
Yeah, I've seen video of them. It looks, they fly underwater is what it looks like. You know, they were flying before they hit the surface, and they just came out. It's incredible. Ducks fascinate me. You know, we deal with all kinds of different species in North America, but there's all kinds in South America and Europe and all over. So ducks are a part of really everybody's life, you know, around the world. And they're just really fascinating because there's so many different kinds and they act differently. And there's so many, and ducks don't live in ugly places. That's another good favorite saying of mine. So every time you go duck hunting or goose hunting somewhere, it's a place that, you know, you can really, you know, get into and enjoy. And it's a lot of fun. So, you know, I think over the last 25 years, we've really done a good job of bringing the TUTV audience to these places and really and introducing them to these people as well. And let's say you guys have really been an integral part of that story. And it's been fascinating talking to you. You know, it's like you said, I watched, you know, as a fan for years, you know, now that I'm a part of the show, it's really, really great to talk to y'all. And once again, thanks so much for all you've done for DU, period. Not just DU TV, because you both have been really strong volunteers and have really helped, you know, our mission along the way. And just can't thank you enough.
It's been joy.
Well, thank you, John. I mean, again, we feel equally blessed. The opportunity to serve on this great organization, conservation organization, Ducks Unlimited. Again, the works that they're doing, it's all backed by science. We have volunteers. We have staffs. And the fact is, the work that we're doing today is going to put more wildlife, waterfowl in the sky and impact the wetlands and associated habitat for generations to enjoy these same great hunting, you know, adventures that Mark and I are doing today.
Yeah, I think that there was a kind of survey done of membership back when I was involved at that level of the organization that, you know, asked people the number one thing that motivated their commitment to DU, and it was to leave a legacy for future generations. You know, that these experiences that Jared and I have been so blessed to have, and our friends and family, that I think people like you, John, and all the staff there, and certainly all the tens of thousands of volunteers around the country, want to ensure that future generations are able to have these same experiences. And that's really what it's about. Is, you know, we want to make double sure that our grandkids, our great grandkids, and beyond see those snow geese in the sky the way that we did, see the old squaw popping out, whatever it is, because they're just beyond description and they're extraordinary in our world.
Yeah. Bottom line is, good habitat is key to waterfowl populations and success.
It's really great to be a part of an organization like Ducks Unlimited. I get to come here and work at DU headquarters every day, which is really a shrine to waterfowl. I mean, it's really an incredible experience. I mean, it's hard to wrap your head around it if you're a waterfowl hunter or not. It's really an incredible place and an incredible mission, and we can't thank you guys enough for being a part of it. And I tell you what the audience wants to know and what I want to know is, you know, when are we going to see a Jared Brown, Mark Pierce episode on DU TV again? I'm going to work hard to put that together.
Hey, bring it.
Twist my arm if you have to go duck hunting, okay?
Yeah, I know. It'd be hard.
You know, reliving
hey,
all these.
Is tomorrow too soon?
Yeah.
Well, we can go to South America, I guess, but we don't do anything in South America, so we can't go there. So yeah. We got to wait a minute. But I think everybody would love to see y'all back on the show for an episode, and I think we'll work on making that happen.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, reliving all these old stories just gets the juices flowing again. How much fun it was telling these stories to the DU audience. So let's do it.
All right. I'm going to keep y'all to that. We're gonna make it happen. But anyway, thanks again, guys. I mean, this has really been a pleasure for me. And thanks again for all you've done for DU.
Thank you, John, and your producer, Chris. We appreciate you guys and what you do and spreading the DU gospel. Happy that we could participate.
Thank you, John. Enjoyed it.
And thanks for everybody listening to the DU podcast. Once again, if you want to see old episodes of the show, go to ducks.org, go to the media tab at the top, pull it down. DU TV is right there, and you can go down a rabbit hole of old episodes and watch the thing for hours. So anyway, folks, thanks for listening to the Ducks Unlimited podcast and supporting Ducks Unlimited, North America's leader in wetlands conservation. And as the late, great Wade Bourne used to say, more habitat on the ground means more ducks in the sky. I'm John Gordon, and thanks for listening to the DU Podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the DU Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show. And visit www.ducks.org/DU Podcast for resources based on today's topics, as well as access to more episodes. Opinions expressed by guests do not necessarily reflect those of Ducks Unlimited. Until next time, stay tuned to the ducks. You and your dog are a team. Fuel is best in the field and in life with Purina Pro Plan Sport. Made for hardworking dogs of all ages, every sport formula starts with real meat as the number one ingredient and is specifically formulated to support strength and stamina. Try it today and see why ProPlan is the official dog food of Ducks Unlimited. Learn more at ProPlanSport.com.